This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Books Uncovered, an exciting conversation about books and literary events, brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
I'm Holly.
And I'm Bella.
Over the next half hour, we'll dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library. Kia ora.
Kia ora, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to another wonderful episode of Books Uncovered.
Yes.
Brought to you by the Athenaeum Mechanics Institute.
Yeah, so we chose quite of a loose theme this week.
Yes.
Which I suppose could be most of our books we read.
That is true.
Certainly for me. But to be a bit more specific, we're doing a theme of women and queerness to tie all the books we've read together.
Yeah, because I think for mine, I probably could have picked a lot of different themes out of it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But I was like, what ties these out? Books that we've both read together.
It's always an interesting task to be like, okay, I think we need, next time we'll be very imaginative. Look at us being like, oh. Anyway, what have you brought in? What's your first book?
So I have brought in, my first book that I read is called The Wall by Marlon Haushofer. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. I hope so. So she is a 20th century Austrian writer who lived from 1920 to 1970. And The Wall is her first novel that she published. So it was first published in German in 1963 and then was translated into English by Sean Whiteside in 1990. And I think has been republished sort of in successions. It's a kind of an interesting novel. It seems to be, when I was reading about it, it seems to be like a cult classic that sort of gets rediscovered in each new generation. Because I remember I heard about it quite a lot last year of like book reviewers that I follow were like, talking about it and being like, this is this amazing book that we discovered.
Is it the sort of thing you can find in a bookshop at the moment? Or
I think you could, yeah.
Yeah.
Be in the classic section, I would assume. So, yeah, the author has written some, she has a few other books that have been translated into English. One's called The Loft, Nowhere Ending Sky. And there was one that was translated last year, which I think was for the first time it was translated, called Killing Stella, which is a novella that I do remember seeing coming out as well. So
I love a novella.
Yeah, me too. And this one, this is quite a short novel. I wouldn't call it a novella, but it's, I guess, bite-sized, I'd say. I'll tell you what it's about. So it's a really strange and quietly devastating novel that is turns a speculative premise into something way more intimate. Because when I tell you what the book is about, your first thought is like, oh, dystopian, like sort of horror. But it's really not what you would expect from it. And it's a study of isolation, survival, and the lingering weight of human conditioning. So you start off with the anonymous narrator, who's a middle-aged woman, who's visiting friends in a remote area. And then a few pages in, her hosts leave her alone in their hunting lodge and head into town to get a drink. And then they never come back. So the next morning she discovers, when she goes to find them, she discovers that her part of the mountain has been surrounded by an invisible, impenetrable wall, which separates her from the rest of the world. She can see through the wall. She can see some people. They've just sort of frozen in place, so they've died. And then inside she is left with only a dog, a cow, and a cat, and then the slow passage of the seasons. But I really like how the author really refuses all the conventions of survival fiction. Like, there's no, she doesn't really try to escape. She just sort of accepts what's happened. And there's no dramatic unraveling of the mystery of, like, where the wall comes from. Like, it's just there. And she does a bit like, is this some weird, like, some new weapon by another country that they've unveiled, but it's never really explored any more than that, which I really liked.
Oh, that's so really interesting.
It made me think a lot. I read an Ursula K. Le Guin essay called The Carrier Bag Theory of Fiction, and this sort of reminded me of that, where it's like, it's what she kind of calls a bottle or a container story, which is a space that holds experience rather than propels action. So, yeah,
it's all about the experience of her being in the house, but
yeah,
isolated.
It's just it's just what her, yeah, it's just her passing the days and like survival basically. So yeah, it's just much of the narrative is devoted to survival. So it's, you follow her planting potatoes, cutting wood, tending the animals, and they really ground the novel in a really stark realism, and you just really settle into the days, like, which sounds kind of boring, but...
Yeah, I'm like, do you get bored reading something like that? Or does she reminisce? Does she go back and...
Yeah, there's quite a lot of, like, existential musings.
Yeah.
And I really like the character. She's very straightforward. So the novel structure is, like, it's a retrospective account that she's writing 2 years into her isolation, and it's pieced together from her memory and a diary that she's kept. So it's, you're sort of in her head, it's not really like a story she's telling to people. It's sort of, she, it's like an act of self-preservation. So a way to like contain her truth and stave off madness.
Yes.
So there's like a really good, I forgot to write the line down, but she's like, I'll hide this after I've written it. She was like, I don't know what, she doesn't want the thing that she might turn into to read it. So that was really interesting. Mm. And there's a bit where she's like, she's quite detached and like unsentimental. And she's like, I don't really, she talks about how she doesn't miss her children. She misses like them when they were 5 years old, but she's just kind of let go of who they were as adults. And she was like, I think I even did that before I was isolated like this. So she's quite an interesting voice to like get inside the head of. And she had these really beautiful relationships with the animals in her life. So there's like Lynx the dog and Bella the cow, and there's these cats, and she really has, they all have like, she has like really fascinating inner voices for them as well.
Yeah, that's really interesting, I guess, because they're the cast of characters in a sense.
Yeah, and oh, it's just really beautiful. I really loved the way she wrote about all the animals. And there's a really good quote that I wrote down where she says, I often look forward to a time when there won't be anything left to grow attached to. I'm tired of everything being taken away from me. Yet there's no escape, for as long as there's something for me to love in the forest, I shall love it. And if someday there is nothing, I shall stop living. Wow. So, yeah.
Oh, I really want to read this.
It's really good. Like, I think some people probably not like it at all and find it dull, but, like, I love that sort of novel where it's just like you're just living.
And I like that it's set up, you know, what it is from the get-go, essentially.
It's very straightforward. It's just like, yeah, there's a wall there, and she's stuck behind it, and that's...
So what are you going to do with your audience, in a sense?
Yeah. But, yeah, I thought it was a really beautiful book that encompasses... It can be so many things. Like, it's been read many different ways. It's, like, feminist, existential, ecological, or psychological. So it's, yeah.
Cool.
It's an interesting book, and I recommend everyone...
of the name again.
So it's called The Wall by Marlon Haushofer. Cool. Yes.
That's, I think that's like, is it Sarah Moss has a book called The Wall? Like she does.
She does, I think.
Yeah.
Which I also want to read. I love her.
Yeah, she's pretty great.
So what's your book?
Well, I am reading a book that I just got in at the Athenaeum Library, actually, by Jeanette Winterson, called One Aladdin, Two Lamps. Yeah, I love Jeanette Winterson's writing. I've written a wee bit about her. So she's born in 1959, and she's a UK writer. She was adopted and raised by Christian missionaries and began writing sermons when she was about the age of 6, or some sources say 12. So that kind of explains a lot, I think. And books were forbidden in her life other than the Bible and this sort of thing. So very strict Christian upbringing. She describes her writing as having a political purpose. This is a quote by her. My aim in writing is never just to give pleasure. Art isn't a luxury product. It's always about trying to change people's lives. And so, yeah, often in her writing, so she writes a lot of fiction novels, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a non-fiction book. And she's often in her writing, she weaves other stories into her books, and this is what she's doing with this one, One Aladdin, Two Lamps. So it's sort of taken loose. It's loosely taken from the 1001 Nights, which is a collection of Middle Eastern folk tales, and it explores memoir. It's sort of a memoir, history, philosophy, politics, and self-help. Yeah, I've never read anything like it. I am... Mm. So enthralled by it. It feels really, really exciting to read. It's quite personal. Like, she'll talk about but only touching on it, like meeting her birth mother, you know, when she was 50 and how that made her feel and relationships.
Oh, she met her when she was 50. That's,
yeah. Also, a random fact, she was friends with Ruth Rendell, which I find really interesting because Ruth Rendell is a crime writer. But she kind of was like a literary mother figure to Jeanette Winterson, which is really cool. So what have I got here? When she often speaks quite frankly and clearly on matters that it's almost like, well, a given on some topics, such as, you know, the ever oppressive inequality between men and women. This is a quote. What a woman wears, this is a quote from the book. What a woman wears and how a woman looks is how a woman will be judged by men, certainly, but by other women too, who's accepting allegiance to the asymmetrical norms of patriarchy is part of the teamwork that keeps the illusion real. And I just think it's just so simplistic and blunt, and there's a lot of bluntness in this. Of course, she's not black and white when it comes to gender, and she makes sure to mention her views on gender fluidity. I think, like, I can't remember the name of the novel where it's almost sort of cyborg as well. In some of them, like, she really speaks to sort of this future of non-gender and AI and there's so much in this book to unpack. So while she explores various ideas, she weaves in the stories from the 1001 Nights, particularly that of Shahrazad, who I'm not sure if I'm saying the right, pronouncing the name right. So she's an intelligent heroine and narrator of the 1001 Nights. You might know the story of the emperor who, out of jealousy from his worst wife having lots of lovers, he decided to punish all women by marrying a virgin every day, and in the morning he would murder her. Until one day he meets Shahrazad, who starts to tell him the story, which is the 1001 Nights. And and so the sun will rise and she's alive and lives another day.
He wants to keep hearing the story.
Yeah, he wants to keep hearing the story. So this book's very much about the power of stories. And she talks about things like, you know, Trump and colonization and what happens when you take out the middle of a story. It changes the beginning and the end and all this. Yeah, really, really exciting ideas. The 1001 Nights has, you know, lots of ideas like don't commit evil to those who have shown you kindness. And so the stories, she'll kind of talk on nonfiction and then it will go into the actual story. If you're not a fan of reading nonfiction or feel like politics is too heavy, this is a really gentle way to engage with important ideas about the world, I'd say. This is a quote about Shahrazad, who's the narrator of 1001 Nights. She changes her predicament, holds out hope for progressive politics, currently losing ground to radical right-wing thuggery. A better story starts with a better story, she writes. Reason will not win the day without imagination. Nothing changes. I mean, to be honest, I could have pulled so many quotes out of the book. Jeanette Winterson writes about the importance of reading and furnishing your mind like a library. She writes about the vapidness of social media. She says TikTok videos won't bring you meaning. Neither will social media's weapons of mass distraction. They shrink the human mind to its smallest scope. Needing the next dopamine hit from the outside every few minutes is a miserable way to live. It's a strategy of disconnect, and it makes it harder to settle down with a text that asks for our complete attention. Complete attention on books might be a bit scary, because the next thing that happens is that you start to pay attention to your own inner life. Have you got one?
Oh, God.
I know. And then talks about, like, the soul being asleep and that it's sort of like, is it worth waking up yet, you know? Mm. And about her mind being furnished with stories and books that she's read so, you know, she could be held prisoner but she would be kept.
That inner library.
That inner life. And then I've just got two more quotes because she's amazing. She argues, who comes home after a long day hunting and gathering just to stay alive and settles down to paint pictures on the wall? Humans. And first we had to make the crayons, so don't tell me art is a luxury. And then, actually, one more. People ask me, what is the point of reading literature? By literature, I mean those works of the imagination that are more than page turners. Is the time, oh, I've done a typo here, is the time to be tossed away, once read, twice forgotten? Literature allows complexity, but complexity doesn't mean obscurity. Literature doesn't mean boring. What are we all hoping for? Well, what am I hoping for? Is a piece of work with the power to captivate us on many levels. And I have to say that this book very much does that. So that's One Aladdin, Two Lamps, Jeanette Winterson's nonfiction book that's just come out.
That sounds so good. That sounds like my perfect book.
Yeah, I actually want to own it.
Yeah, and you are buying it for the Athenaeum, yes. You said before.
Yeah, so it's at the Athenaeum Library.
Come and get it from there.
Come check it out.
Yeah, I feel that was a good call out about I've been slowly moving towards deleting my TikTok. So I keep finding myself being like, talking about something, like, oh, I read it. I'll be like, oh, I was reading this article, and then my brain, I'm like, no, I wasn't. I watched like a 2-minute TikTok about it. It's like,
yes.
Like, you need to start reading more nonfiction and articles again.
Yeah. And I think it kind of distracts us from being critical as well, because you might follow certain people, and then it's like, you just, I don't know, like it lulls. I luckily missed out on the TikTok thing because I'm a bit older, but Instagram. I never got into watching Reels or anything.
It's good. Reels is the worst one.
Yeah. Well, I delete my Instagram every Thursday night after I leave the Athenaeum. And then I put it back on my phone on Tuesday when we reopen again, because we have an Instagram account and I can just check my Instagram on my computer. True. It's a nice disconnect.
That is a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should delete my Instagram as well.
And I'm sure for someone like Jeanette Winterson, who's born in like the 60s, it's like, yeah, it just must seem crazy.
Yeah, seeing
younger people.
Completely different world of like, that I'm sure, like, it's not a particularly good world, I think.
No. I think there's
good parts about it, but.
But it plays on our insecurities, and I think the people that suffer the most are, you know, women and children and young people. That are malleable and the patriarchy and rah.
Free yourself, people. Read a book.
Yes.
Speaking of books, on our book podcast.
Yes.
the other book I read this week was one called Heap Earth Upon It by Chloe Michelle Howarth. So this came out last year, and it was a second novel by Chloe, who is now an acclaimed Irish author. So her debut came out in 2023 called Sunburn, and I think I might have talked about it when it came out. Okay. I can't remember, or when I read it. So it was really well received. It was a very beautiful book, telling the coming-of-age story of sapphic yearning about two girls in Ireland.
I feel like you did talk about this.
I think
this.
It did, although a lot of sapphic yearning books set in Ireland in my time. But I think I did talk about it on here. This is her second book, and I have to say it's a very different book from Sunburn. So just a pre-warning, if you love Sunburn, I've been reading a lot of reviews, people have been like, I hated this, it's so different. I liked it, but like it is... It leans very heavily into the gothic genre, and the gay yearning here takes on quite a much darker, obsessive flavour. So just be wary of that, and just release your mind from Sunburn and go into something completely new. I recommend, because I did enjoy this book. So it opens in 1965, and you're following the four O'Leary siblings as they arrive in the small rural island town of Ballycrae. And they're each very haunted by their past. They've left their old village to come here and start a new life. And someone's died, and you don't know why. You don't really know who they are to the characters. It sort of gets unfolded as the book goes on. You're planted here. That's all. You don't know much about the characters. And the rest of the book has Chloe Michelle Horsey really drip feeds fragments of crucial information from the different perspectives of the siblings. So there's Tom, who's the eldest, and he's very desperate to please everyone in his life. And there's Jack, who's isolated and grieving. Anna, scornful and overwhelmed, and then they're all anchored by the younger sibling, Piggy, who's 9 years old and is growing up without her parents. Why? We don't know.
Do you find out?
You do find out. Okay. Yeah. she establishes a really interesting tone, which is really oppressive and seductive at the same time. And you see the prose. She has really beautiful prose. It's the same as in Sunburn. It's really lyrical, lush, and quite cutting in its clarity. And I thought the novel was really at its strongest when you're in Anna, the sister's interior world. So she's the one that's sapphically yearning. But it's twisted into something sharp and really obsessive. And the passages just feel really raw, and they're like embarrassingly honest in their intensity. Like, you don't feel nice reading it. You're like, it's kind of almost disgusting in a way, but which I liked. Like, it's just an interesting reading experience of being just being like, oh, please don't say that. Like, what are you like? I enjoyed being in her head the most. It was the most compelling. I thought some of the other characters, their thoughts could be quite similar, would be one of my criticisms of the book. Like, you didn't really feel, especially the brothers, like there's differences there, but like tonally it was quite similar.
Two-dimensional.
Yeah. I wouldn't go quite that far because I still find them compelling, but yeah, it's in a way, like, you know, you don't feel the stark differences when you jump into like Anna's head.
Oh, yeah.
You follow them building their life in Ballycrae and their relationships, and they get quite close with the local couple, Bill and Betty Nevin. And then that, as they foster that connection, it really quickly starts to curdle into fixation and unease. And yeah, it's just quite a haunting effect that it's like the book just sits in your body quite a lot, which I guess is a good sign of a good gothic novel, feel unsettled. Like, there's this building sense of dread. My other criticism, apart from the point of view, is that I found that she often undercuts herself, like, because where her writing is really powerful is when she is doing these really suggestive and open-ended, like, sentences. But then, like, it just was really annoying. She'd do this beautiful sentence, and then it would slip into over-explanation, so there'd be like an extra added bit explaining like why the character was thinking that, and it was like
undermining to the reader in a way.
Yeah, it was like not trusting the reader enough.
Do you think that's just something she'll, because is this her second book, so yeah, maybe she'll,
I think she'll work it out,
evolve from it.
Because you didn't notice it so much. She did do it in Sunburn as well, I was realizing looking back, but you don't realize it so much because of the genre. You're really in this, like, you're really swept up in like her, the character's yearning for the girl she's in love with. So you don't notice it as much, but it's definitely a theme that carries on. And in this one, where it's like tonally different.
You're like, look, I love your books, but you need to trust a reader.
definitely she's a beautiful writer, and like it's, I think, will only get better.
Oh, cool.
And I really also liked its exploration of queerness. And I was reading an interview with the author, and she's talked about why she wanted to write this novel set in 1960s Ireland, rural Ireland, and how she had to find a way to write about something that was not allowed to exist, and to research something that had been erased from public life to create a queer character who does not know what queerness is. So it was really interesting to be inside of the head of multiple characters really that are queer, but they don't know what they're feeling, or like there's no words to explain it. So
when that language didn't exist yet around it. Yeah.
Like, I can't even imagine like how difficult it would be to like understand yourself. Like, I've been thinking it's like desire here is not just forbidden but almost unknowable, where it creates a version of sapphic longing shaped as much by absence as by longing itself. I can't remember where I read that, but I wrote it down because it was a really beautiful. Maybe that same article with the author. So I won't say anything more because I don't want to spoil it, because there's quite a few good twists, but I do recommend it despite
my... Remind us of the name?
So it's called Heap Earth Upon It by Chloe Michelle Haworth.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Ah, so many good books.
I've had a great run of books lately.
Yeah, same. Well, I was quite happy to pick up this one to have a non-fiction, but now I'm like, I want to get into a story again.
Yeah.
And there's an international shortlist, booker shortlist, has just been announced recently.
Yeah, I just saw that. And the Women's Prize.
Yeah. Oh, true. Gosh, a year ago already.
I know.
I feel like we were just talking about like Safekeep and okay, well, I hope everyone's having a great holiday weekend because it's the long 4-day weekend because of Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
We will be back here in 2 weeks' time with another exciting show.
Yeah, see you then.
See ya.
Books Uncovered. Exciting conversations about books and literary events. Brought to you by the Dunedin Athenaeum Library and Mechanics Institute.
Join us, Holly and Bella, every second Saturday at 12 p.m. as we dive into themes ranging from romance to quirky book blurbs, all discovered within the depths of the Athenaeum Library.
That's Books Uncovered.
Saturdays at 12 on ORFM and online at oar.org.nz.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.